Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for joining us today as we talk about financial matters, both myself and my co-host here, Pat. We are both financial advisors. Actually, I don't even know the term financial advisor. I don't even like that term anymore because so many people call themselves financial advisors, I guess.
But we help people save and go into retirement.
Yeah. We help people make wise choices, navigate all the different things as they are saving for retirement and transition to retirement. Frankly, we do other stuff as well and the financial planning side of things. But most people who come to us and a good portion of our program is really dealing with helping people save for retirement and get into retirement and get into a point in their life where really work is an option and not an obligation. So there's nothing wrong with work. I think work's a great thing for many. But unfortunately, so many people go through life and don't save enough. And retirement's
And actually, quite frankly, accumulate too much debt and go into retirement with debt.
They live above their means.
Yeah.
Most Americans.
If you live in a small town in Fairfield, Iowa, where the house costs $90,000, and you have no debt going into retirement, and even modest savings, Social Security may be enough to actually support you.
Okay, so what's your point?
saving for retirement is most certainly paramount.
I'm with you.
But going into retirement with no debt is more important than savings.
At least don't have a negative net worth when you're old. Is that what you're saying?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You were talking about having the bar as low as possible.
Thank you. But that's not.
Don't be negative on net worth.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Anyway. Which is why the average net worth in the United States is something, like $9,000 or $8,000?
There's a lot of people that really don't have much money.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they're probably not listening to programs like this, because those that are listening to programs like this tend to take some
ownership.
And responsibility for themselves. So in any case, this program today is a best of show, which means that it is the end of the year. And like many who are taking some holidays during Christmas and New Year's, both myself and Pat, we thought we'd do the same thing, spend some time with our families as well. So we are not live this week. We're not in the studio this week. And this is pre-recorded. And our callers are some of our best of callers. So our great production staff, with Jasmine and Pietro and team and Ricky, they all spent some time looking through some previous callers and came up with some of the best. So
what a joy listening to recordings of Scott and Pat.
I think Pietro started smoking. He was having such a hard time listening to those whole thing.
No wonder. Why can't we keep people?
Anyway.
Why does everyone always quit?
Anyway, hey, but if you'd like to join us in a future time, call us, leave a message, we'll schedule a time to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. But let's go right now to some calls. We're in Carson Valley, Nevada with John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, I love listening to you guys, and thank you for taking the call.
Thank you, John.
Where are you located in the beautiful state of Nevada, our silver state?
I'm Carson Valley, just across the border
there
from
you
California.
Go. Yeah. Beautiful Carson Valley.
Pat keeps talking about, one day I'm leaving California.
Oh, I do.
I'm going to Nevada.
Actually, the Carson Valley is in the backside of the
51% of the year in Nevada, and life is good.
Carson Valley is in the backside of the mountain range, the Sierras. It's actually in a rain shadow.
All right,
that's
John.
Correct.
That's what can we do correct. For you?
Well, I'm thinking about changing my 401k IRA withdrawal strategy, given the new tax laws. And I've been taking out so that my modified adjusted income stays just below $214,000. But I'm thinking about taking it up to where it would be just below $320,000. You know, hence I'd be increasing my withdrawals by about $106,000.
Uh-huh.
And I'm currently taking out about $100,000.
How big's the how big is the IRA?
IRA and 401k is about $1.8 million.
Okay.
And it's conservatively invested.
All right. Are you doing a Roth conversion or just taking the money out?
I would try to move most of it into a Roth.
Okay. All right. Good. Because I'm thinking, unless you just plan on spending it, you don't want
anything above the required minimum distribution, you would want to convert to a Roth.
Exactly. And my kids' heirs are in California, and they have no plans to come over to Nevada.
All right. Well, that makes sense. Good. Scott, do you want to explain why that makes sense to the rest of the listeners, why you would take and pay these dollars in a zero
tax? Because you're taxed on your withdrawal where you reside, not where the money was earned. So
you pull it out and convert it to a Roth, and you only pay federal income taxes on it. And then because it's a Roth, when you die, your kids inherit something that they don't have to.
Although it certainly wouldn't surprise me if one day the California legislator said, you know, I think any Roth withdrawal over some dollar amount should be subject to California state income tax for the opportunity to live in such a fantastic state as California.
That wouldn't surprise me either.
So okay, here's the things I think you need to consider. One is what's this going to do to your Medicare? How old are you?
69.
So you have Medicare Part B, and the premiums just got a little worse, too, under the new tax law. When your income exceeds a couple hundred thousand, 190,000 or something like that, your Medicare Part B.
Yeah, that's why I'm staying below 214, because when I stay below 214, the Medicare is about $4,500 for myself and my wife. If we stay below 320,000, it's about $6,400.
Yeah, so cut down to $2,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would take my eye off that. I would think about the taxation of the heirs when you die.
Yeah.
If they plan on staying in the state of California.
Are you spending it? I assume you've got quite a bit of other assets and income outside of your retirement accounts.
That's correct.
And you're not spending these dollars, and you probably won't spend these dollars.
Well, the $106,000, what I'm thinking of doing is moving it in the fourth quarter. I'll have to take minimum required distributions, take it in like January 1st, and use that money to send off a payment to the federal government on January 15th. So that all of the 106 will end up in a law.
So here's the thing. I certainly, I mean, I love the way you're thinking, right? Because this is just beautiful planning. We're the first month in January of this new tax bill. So I don't even, there's probably not even a lot of good software programs that are.
But there will be by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would kind of just hang tight for a bit, but I would certainly plan on, and what you're already looking at, is converting as much as you can to that Roth, particularly if the thought is that these at least some portion of these dollars are going to be transferred to a child who's going to be in a higher tax state where Nevada has zero tax. I think this is exactly the right way to look at it.
And Scott, even,
and just look at the Medicare Part B, that increase, that's just a tax.
That's correct. Correct. And the savings on your California state income tax for your heirs
would be massive.
I'd pay more on the Medicare Part B in order to send those dollars downstream free of tax.
But what it means is actually it's about a 2% tax on the next 100 grand of income, isn't it?
Versus 13%. Depending upon what your income. Just out of curiosity, John, I'm always curious when I talk to someone like yourself. What did you do for a living when you were in the workforce?
I worked for a utility, and I did a lot of financial analysis.
Were you an engineer by education or an analyst?
I have a bachelor's of science in engineering and an MBA.
I knew it.
And in Colorado, we're talking with Sophie. Sophie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was, I'd like to retire in 8 years. I'll be 55 in 8 years. And I also have a son that'll be starting college that year. And so I've been trying to figure out what's the best way to plan for that perfect storm. And is it really possible to retire in 8 years?
Mm.
And so I work for the state. I have a pension and I'm married. And this is what my plan was. And I just don't know if it's a good plan.
Okay.
So I have a rental property. If it appreciates, you know, 2 to 5% per year, I'll be able to sell that in 8 years and possibly pay off the majority of my current mortgage, which is a fairly new mortgage. And then I'd be able to lower my cost of living, mm-hmm. my mortgage enough to be able to afford to retire and then pay cash for college on a month-to-month basis.
Okay. So did you do the calculation with the property selling it in 8 years with an after-tax dollar amount? You figured out what you would have paid on the taxes?
Selling the rental. 80%.
All right, close enough. 80. All right.
And did it work? Did the numbers work at 2%? Because it's a big difference between 2% and 5% a year.
Yeah, they kind of worked. I mean, I feel like my mortgage would be about, if it was 5%, my new mortgage would be about $100,000 a year. And my current mortgage is like $475,000. And so I would drop it down significantly. And then my, at the 2%, it would be, you know, it would be more like my new mortgage would be like $180,000. And so,
what's your current home, your residence, you have a mortgage of $475,000. What's that home worth?
About $1 million.
Okay. And the rental property, what's the value of that?
It's $350,000 today.
And what do you owe on it?
About $170,000.
Why do you want to retire at age 55?
I want to start a new career. I want to do something different.
What would that be?
I don't know, real estate, finances, a kindergarten teacher. I've been thinking, you know, accountant. I don't know. Maybe I could work at a nursery with plants, something. I may not retire at 55.
Got it. And what's your pension like? Do you have to be there till 55 in order to vest? Or fully vest?
Well, no. I'm vested at 20, and I'll be at 23 at 55.
And what percentage of your final pay will your pension be?
Well, I have a 401k and a pension. And between the two, it's about $150,000.
But your pension, how much income will just your pension provide?
I think it's like $4,100. It depends on if I have a survivor on that calculation. Between $4,000 and $5,000.
And what's your pay now?
Pension. Well, part time. I make about $100,000, about $90,000 to $100,000 a year.
And how much is in your 401k?
50 or 60, maybe. Oh no, I'd have to.
Okay.
So what you're talking about? So you make between $90,000 and $100,000 a year. At 55, you'll have about half of that made up for a pension.
Okay.
Right. So.
But she's going to go back to work. She doesn't plan on leaving the workforce. So your question is basic college funding, which is if all the stars align and I sell this property and I make enough money to pay off the mortgage, do I then pay for college cost out of pocket?
I have a feeling that college costs, even if you get your mortgage taken care of, that college cost is going to be about the same as your mortgage. So when you leave the workforce at a salary of $90,000 to $100,000 and you have a $48,000 coming in from a pension, there's still that differential there.
And how many children do you have that are going to go to college, do you think? Or
I have two kids.
Here, you,
one
Sophie,
will go to college.
Yeah. You really should sit down with an advisor and go and really run through the numbers. Part of this is going to come down to you need to understand what the trade-offs are. So it might be very realistic for you to retire at 55. And you might be in a job like, look, I'll put another 8 years because it means that much to my pension, but there's no way I want to work past that, right? Well, then it's like, well, let's figure out what that means. From a financial standpoint, if your goal was to accumulate as many dollars as possible, we'd say keep at this job until the day you drop dead. Never retire.
And don't have children.
Yeah.
But that ship has
sailed. Sell your house and go move into a much smaller one, pay cash for a much smaller house today. That's if your whole goal was to accumulate as many dollars before you die. That's not your goal. If your goal is to get out of your current job at age 55, then I think it's important for you to understand what are those trade-offs going to be. Because you're not going to be able to hit 55 and replace $90,000 to $100,000 a year in pay based upon what you've told us thus far. But
yeah, 'cause I have this UDMA account for the kids and a scholar share account. I was like, should I be paying off my mortgage as fast as possible and then pay cash for college, or should I be vesting my money into these UDMA?
How much do you have in the UDMAs?
Oh, I don't know. I have like maybe 2,000 per kid. One kid has 3, the other has 2.
Okay, and how much are in the 529 plans?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe again 1,000 or 2,000 for each kid.
They are effectively not funded at all.
Right. Yeah, it's very little.
Yeah. You open the account
one semester,
but yeah, or some books, or
it all depends where they go.
God forbid, a very expensive fraternity or sorority.
Yeah, but don't fund. But the fact is, you fund what the cash flow provides for you to fund, and the kid, not every kid needs to go away to some school and live in the dorms and. Yeah, I mean those are luxuries, frankly.
Yeah,
that's not the ticket to it.
That is,
I did too. It's not.
It's
not the ticket to a great career by going and living in the dorms for a couple years in some nice campus somewhere. That's a luxury.
Right, it's true. Yeah,
that's a luxury. College is important. Don't get me wrong, and I believe college is important for many young people, but doesn't always have to be at the highest institution on a living a living a life
on the hog.
High on the hog.
Sophie. What would really serve you well is to meet with a good qualified certified financial planner, and you need to do some what if scenarios and run the numbers. Here's where things are going, and they'll sit and run through the numbers. Here's where you're at today. Here's what you're going to be like at 55, and here's some of the trade offs you can be considering. And it might be.
So I tried to find a financial consultant. They're like $3,000 to $5,000 a year.
So some will do what's called is episodic. Which means you pay them for
one time plan,
and that's probably all you need.
And what would you expect something like that to cost?
Anywhere between $1,500 and $2,500.
Okay.
For a good one, you get someone that's going to do it, and then they want you to buy an annuity or something. You're not interested in that. What's dangerous about us giving this recommendation is that you're going to go to someone and they're going to try to sell you a universal life or a whole life or a big fat annuity or things that aren't good for you. You want to pay for episodic advice, which is, hey, am I on the right track? And I can tell you from what information you have given us so far, that the answer is you should probably be funding your 401k and not worry about the 529s. Or paying down the mortgage.
Yeah, the thing is, you just need to go through the numbers and then see what are the trade-offs here.
Yeah.
What are the levers I've got to pull? What sacrifices do I want to make between now and age 55, if any? And then at age 55, if I quit working and decide to be a gardener or something that doesn't really make any money, what's that look like? Or do I need to focus on something that is going to generate some income? And that's what that planning process will I'll let you go through. So I appreciate the time. So we got to run here, but I appreciate the call and wish you well. And I know there's some great advisors out there. We've got some great certified financial planners in the Denver area as well. So I don't want to make a pitch for our firm, but I know there's some great advisors out there. So we wish you well. And I think it's a great, and there's nothing wrong at all by saying I'd like to at 55 quit doing what I'm currently doing and think about doing something else. I think that's a great thing to be thinking of. And clearly I've seen over my career, many people, transition to retirement where it's not necessarily full real retirement, but it's more of a transition into a new type of career. So good luck to you, Sophie. We're in Elk Grove, California, talking with John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good morning, guys. I appreciate you taking my call.
Our pleasure, John.
So I'm calling, I'm helping my mom out. She's 65 years old. She's widowed. She owns her own home and a rental property that she's owned them for over 30 years. So she pays minimal property taxes. She was a stay-at-home mom. She worked part-time jobs growing up, but nothing, no career, nothing serious.
Okay.
So her income is, she's getting $1,600 a month in survivor's benefits from when my dad passed away. And,
is that a pension or Social Security, the $1,600?
Social Security. It's a survivor's benefit.
Uh-huh. Got it. Okay.
Social Security told us that it would never really be worth it to go on hers because she didn't earn that much money.
Yep.
And then she's getting about $1,000 a month in rental income. She has no debt. She owns her car and obviously her house. So her bills are minimal and she lives a pretty frugal lifestyle.
John, are both the house and the rental property paid off in full?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Her primary house is probably worth conservatively about $400,000, and the rental it's $200,000.
Okay.
She has $300,000 in an IRA, and I know how some people feel about annuities, but it is what it is at this point. It's divided into two different annuities. Their surrender period's over with, so she could pull the money out anytime she wants without any penalties or surrender charges.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a guaranteed fixed rate of 3%.
Okay.
She asked about a year and a half ago. She was asking for my advice if she should put it in the stock market. I kind of pushed her towards no. I regret that, but it is what it is at this point.
Well, come on. Okay. You wouldn't have regretted if it went down and she was calling you every morning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So her and I were talking, and she was thinking about using some of that $300,000 and putting it into the stock market for long term, because I keep thinking 3% is not very much. It's just inflation, right? That's just beating inflation. So I just wanted to get your opinion on what you guys thought.
So, first of all, this is your mother, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I wouldn't be so. It's a chance. So over the next 25 years, I'm fairly confident that she would earn more by being invested in the broad stock market than she would be by having this money at this 3% in this fixed annuity. The challenge is, it's impossible to know what the next year or 5 years are ever going to look like. Now, if she could be comfortable, if you could say, let's take some dollar, $50,000, $100,000, some portion of it, let's allocate it to that future. Let's not worry about it. Because the next time there's a downturn, we're going to hear all kinds of bad news, and it's going to, like, it's different now. You need to get your money out now before it goes to zero, all that, because that's what happens. And if we think back to the financial crisis, that was what everyone was stating at that time as well.
John, how old are you?
I'm 43.
And do you have an experience investing?
Not really. I mean, I understand the basics of it, but, you know, I believe in dollar cost averaging. I understand about diversity. I understand that, you know, one of the things that I've told her was if she could think of the number of amount of money of that $300,000 that she wants to invest for long term and think 10, 15, 20 years out that she won't be able to touch it.
But the question, here's what I ask. Here's what I would, I'm just thinking, this is my mother. How would I address this? I'd be thinking,
What's the upside? What's the downside?
Yes. Is she going to be comfortable? And what's the upside? What's the downside? As far as inflation head, she's got the rental house, right?
And she's living comfortably on her current income.
Yes.
I think if it were my mother, I don't think I would.
You know what, it depends on John's relationship with his mother.
And
I got to tell you.
Yeah, that's true.
This is where it ends up. Because what happens is you'll come and see. Let's say you and your mother come and see us, right? An advisor at Hanson McLean. The advisor's going to look at this and say, I'll tell you what our recommendation would probably be. It would probably be maybe leave $200,000 in that guaranteed 3%.
That's pretty good. Use that as your bond portion.
And take $100,000 and invest it in, you know, a relatively, you know, maybe a growth and income portfolio. So at the end of the day, if you look at the $300,000, 20% of the portfolio will be in equities. So what happens is your mother is going to walk out of that building, our beautiful office, and look at you and say, what do you think, John? And your mother's going to continue to point to you throughout the whole investment process.
Yeah.
And the question you ask yourself is it going to change anything? Well, it could. If we get into a hyperinflation environment, it would actually some downside protection. Do you want to spend that time and energy with your mother in order to get that higher yield out of there? Do you think it's worth it? Is it going to make her nervous? Is it going to make you nervous? Right. But I don't think there's anything wrong with actually taking $100,000 of that and making it more aggressive. I know if it was my mother.
It's got about $1 million. Here's how it's got about $1 million, about $700,000 in real estate, about $300,000 in a guaranteed income.
I'd take 100, maybe even 150,000 when you think about it like that, Scott, and invest it and just tell mom, look at this is going to go up.
How much
is going to go down?
Is she taking income now from her IRA?
You know what? My father passed away about 5 years ago, and the last 2 years she's taking $8,000 each year. Out.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, here's what you could do. You could say, look, we're going to take $8,000 a year out of this fixed annuity. Mom, it's going to last you 14 years or whatever the number is when you.
Yeah.
So these other dollars, right. We don't have to worry what the value is tomorrow or next year. All we care about is the value 14 years from now.
Yeah, I'd go
and
with
if
that.
She can get comfortable with that, then there's no reason whatsoever why you shouldn't have some portion invested for the long term. I think we're much closer to the top than we are to the bottom.
Which makes it a little bit more difficult.
But it's hard. No one can predict. You know, who knows when this thing's going to want to take another breather.
Yeah, I know
it will, but.
So I would actually look at that, John.
Yeah.
I would take 100 or 150,000 and invest it.
I respect your advice, and I liked what you guys said, because that's pretty much what my thought process was. And I, you know, obviously no one can predict the future, but, you know, like I said, if I explained to her the longer time horizon she has out there, the safer, if that's the word.
That's a great way to look at it, John. That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
It's because investments come down in large part to how much time we have to let them do what they need to do. So greatly appreciate the call.
And John, you have a good understanding of this.
Now we're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
You are listening to a best of program today. Now, we didn't have trouble finding a full hour of best of because we're trying to find good clips.
Yes.
But we've got some good clips. We've got some
We got some mediocre ones as well. So we just mix them in. You decide.
Actually, Pat, to be fully transparent, years ago, our best of, we'd just take an old show and run it. And the station saying, you're listening to a best of program. It was no best of. It was just
taking
off the shelf. Fortunately, now we actually take some time, listen to some callers. We try to find things that are of
maybe relevant.
Maybe amusing, maybe not, but something that you can maybe at least grow from.
Yeah.
But
you might even tune until the end of the show.
If you're listening, think, oh man, I would have loved to call these guys this week because I've got a question. Call anyway. Leave a message. We'll schedule a time to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. So we'd still love to get you scheduled for a call. And it is the last, essentially, there's no real time left in 2018 to do any planning.
That's correct. It's pretty much done.
Yeah, pretty much done. I mean, maybe if there's...
Maybe you could write a check to your church or something like that.
I guess you could do that. Or another charity.
Or any charity. Yes.
There's a lot of things you can still do then.
Some things you could still do.
You might have trouble doing a Roth conversion.
Might be.
Just because of
the time strain.
Yeah.
But what you can do for next year, right? What you can do for next year, so you can go to our website. You can read the article, 2019 taxes, 4 things you can do right now for your 2019 taxes. And you could take advantage of the increased limits of the contributions to your company 401k.
Yeah.
And or IRA if you qualify.
But 401k, it's actually would be a good time to increase your, if you're at a point where, if you're not maxing out, it's a good time to increase your 401k. I don't care what you spend on Christmas.
Yes.
Look, you're going to want to have some money saved for retirement. Increase that 401k. If you are maxed out, you can increase your contributions. It's going from 18.5 in 2018 to 19,000 next year. Plus, if you're 50 or older, you can kick in another $6,000. So increase those if you can. Well, let's go to the calls here at Hanson McLean. We're in Sacramento talking with Jill. Jill, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi there.
Hi, Jill.
Yeah, hi there. So I had, it's kind of an open-ended question, but I'm sure you're going to ask me more questions to qualify. But I was just wondering, how can one save for retirement and still go back to school at the same time, and work at the same time?
Well, so here's how I view this, look at this question. So sometimes people come to me, sometimes younger folks will ask us, hey, Scott, what's a great investment? Or where can I put money to have a great return? And when I start having a conversation with people, it typically comes back to if your objective is to build wealth, maybe one of your objectives in life, obviously, the best place to do that is not by finding a good financial planner or investing in the 401k or an IRA or Roth IRA or what. It's in your own career.
It's making yourself more valuable to the marketplace.
Whether that's a job within a company or within government, or it's a starting a bit, whatever it is.
Or a new career or whatever. If the objective is to make more money over time, the biggest asset you have is your skills. Mm-hmm. Is your skills. Mm-hmm. That is the largest asset. So depending upon your age, why does it matter if you're going to school right now that you actually continue to save for retirement?
That's a good question.
Right? How old are you?
I am getting close. I'm 53.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that by going back to school, that it'll help retool me, so that I can continue earning a good income.
It will. Will the school itself? Now I know a. How old is she? She's 52, maybe 52. Son's in college. She went back to college with her son.
I'm sure the son loved that.
Uh-huh.
The son must have loved that. Mom, what are you doing at the party? I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it works just like that. Mom's doing a beer bong.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we can get really off track here. But, And she's doing it because it's going to improve her income. She knows the outcome. She's been told by her employer, when you get this, your income will go up by that amount. Yeah, it will go up by $10,000, $15,000.
And it sounds like, Jill, but you're at the stage, it's not like you're in a position where you can retire at 60, I guess, right? Where you've got the financial assets.
Correct.
So you're sitting there thinking, how do I make myself more valuable? And I would also be thinking, how can I retrain myself so that I can do something that I enjoy?
Until I'm 70, 72, 73, 75.
Exactly.
And you think 75? I was invited to go to a bike ride with this gentleman this week. I can't make it, but every day on his birthday, he rides his age. And so he's doing a 75-mile bike ride on his birthday. Now that's brilliant. Wow. And he still works.
Yeah. And that's how I see it. Even if I didn't have to work, I would want to do work, do some type of work that interested me, you know, on writing or being a teacher or just something that makes me feel like I'm a contributor, you know, to society in a positive manner.
Are you going are you working and going to school at the same time?
That is my goal. That is what I would like to do.
Okay.
Because there's no other way for me to do that. Well, I'm sure I can take a little bit of time off, but I'm not going to allow that for myself.
So I would say not feel obligated to save in your IRA or wherever it is. I would not feel any obligation at all. It might actually create a great window of time to look at doing a Roth conversion if you have a 401k or an IRA to do some Roth conversion. So some tax planning or some financial planning through this season would be prudent. But as far as saving, this is saving. You're investing in yourself, which, assuming you have, you know, some normal intellect and a normal personality and whatnot.
And apparently, after this conversation, you excel in both of those.
I hope so. I really do hope so. Sometimes I wonder, but.
We all play a role. We're all unique. And a lot of it is figuring out what is it that I'm really good at? What are my unique skills and abilities? And what's my unique passion that other people don't have? And it's when you can find the balance between your skills, your passion, and what the marketplace values, the intersection of those three, that's where he hit a home run. That's where it's like, why do I want to retire? Most people spend their life at the intersection of their skills and what the marketplace will pay, not where their passion is. And if you're going back to school where your passion is and the marketplace won't play, like you're studying sociology in the second century.
And the big sociology companies aren't hiring when you retire.
Right, then the marketplace isn't going to pay for it. Then you got a problem. But
yeah.
Well, I think part of it is retooling. I find the sweet spot between my skills, my passion, and what the marketplace is going to value. and also really kind of challenge myself and do some things that might not be, strong of a skill set. But as everyone knows that, as you train for these things, whatever it is, you get better at it as you
correct,
as you're studying. So I'm positive that is the way to go.
Yep.
And I think you've just kind of...
I think
of,
this sounds prudent. It's a better option than sticking in a job that you hate and counting down the days and
yep,
retiring. It's start taking Social Security at 62 because you hate your job and then you find you can't afford to live in your house anymore.
And I would recommend just having... how many kids do I have in college right now? Three. Well, the oldest just graduated. That use the services that they have on campus, like the career center and training centers that they have on campus. They're great, of great value. So yeah, appreciate the call.
Yeah, wish you well, Jill. Appreciate the call a lot. And continuing on at 1-888-2 Hanson, we're in Northern California with Eric. Eric, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yes. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's all I have. Is it echoing?
Oh, no, you're fine.
Okay, my question is in regard to a subject you had last weekend. I listen on every weekend, and I couldn't get through last weekend, which is funny. You're just talking about
that. Uh-huh.
And the question I had was, I'd like to revisit, if you could, was the regarding student loans. It was the other segment on student loans. And there was one point that you made. It was basically you're saying it's never, never a good idea for a parent or a grandparent to co-sign on a student loan. And that
I don't know if we quite said that, but don't jeopardize your retirement and be very careful before you co-sign on a student loan.
So give us your situation.
Okay. The situation is it's kind of unique. My son apparently went to my mom back in 2009. And asked for a co-signer. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't know this had happened until my mother passed away 2 years ago. And I was the executor of her trust, and I was settling everything through, and I started getting her mail and going through her files, and I saw this student loan for $15,000, which is a co-signer on. Since then, all of her estate has been settled and distributed according to her trust, but there's still this lingering co-signer student loan that she's on that I keep getting mail forwarded to me for. And I'm trying to figure out, is she still liable for that as a co-signer? Should I send them information about her death? Or how does that work?
Is your son making payments on the loan?
Yeah, he's regularly making payments. She gets statements just because she's a co-signer.
Got it. Well, your son is responsible, number one, for
yes, but if he defaults, let's assume he defaulted.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
They could go back to your mom's estate and then say, well, who was the trustee or who was the executor of the estate, and come to you and say, well, you shouldn't have distributed that money. You owed us, you're on the hook here.
Would they do that, though?
Yeah, would they do that?
It's $15,000.
Well, your son's making the payments.
Right.
And is your son able to make the payments?
Yeah, he's able to make the payments. A while back, while she was still alive, we tried to get her off of the loan, by submitting paperwork.
Yeah, but they're not going to. Why would they take her off the loan?
Yeah, that didn't work.
Yeah. Think about that. If you were the person that loaned the mom.
So an older woman who's got plenty of assets or a young kid who's got nothing.
Yeah. So if your son's making the loan payments, what are you worried about? I don't understand.
I'm just trying to figure out how to get the mail to stop coming.
Oh, you can't. Don't worry about that.
Or should I inform them that she's deceased or just not?
Yeah, tell them. There's no downside in saying that she's deceased.
They might have some policy where they'll just take her off. Who knows?
There's no downside. There's no downside in saying she's deceased. How big was the estate?
A couple $100,000 in her home and all the other stuff.
I think you're borrowing trouble.
Yeah. Not only that, because of the amount, let's assume for a moment. Let's just assume worst case. Your son quit making the payments. They go through the hassle. They say, aha, there's a co-signer here. Let's go after the co-signer.
And they look at it and they go.
The co-signer's deceased. It's $15,000. If it was $1.5 million, they'd say, let's go after the estate here. Let's figure out who the executor was, trustee was on this, and let's see if we can recapture. But for $15,000, I can't imagine
Yeah.
They would take more.
Yeah. It costs the same amount to go after 1.5 million as it does for 15,000.
So they're not.
So the economics behind it say, why would they even bother? And by the way, she was a co-signer. Your son is still responsible for the payments.
So they're not going to discharge it for anything.
They're not going to discharge it on him for whatever. Yeah. So you can let the company know she's deceased, or you know, if it were me,
throw away the mail.
I would just throw the mail away.
Keep on throwing it away. I don't know. Or just send them a copy of the death certificate. Make it easy. I would.
Yeah, what I've been doing is I've just been writing return to sender no longer at this address and send it, just throw it back in the mail.
You have a death certificate? You can just. I agree with Scott.
I think you're borrowing trouble, too, Eric. I got to tell you.
What's that?
Send him a copy of the death certificate and say, please don't mail here any longer.
Yeah.
And be done with it.
And
I wouldn't worry
call
about
it a day.
I wouldn't worry about that at all.
I think you're borrowing trouble.
Don't worry. Don't worry about that. Yeah. And I mean, probably the prudent thing to do here, and one might argue legally, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not trying to give you legal advice here, but the prudent thing would have been to set aside $15,000 in the estate, have it set aside until the loan was discharged.
Assuming he knew about it. The assumption is
he did know about it. Yes. That would be the prudent thing. Because, so anyway, Eric, appreciate the call. Anytime you're an executor or a trustee of an estate, I mean, part of your responsibility, you do have responsibilities. You're accepting responsibility. Part of that responsibility is to make sure that any creditors are taken care of.
Yes.
And if someone's a co-signer on a loan, they are agreeing to saying, if that party doesn't make the payments, I'm going to come behind and make sure they make good. So while it may not be a financial payment due today, it could certainly be one in the future. It is a potential liability. And let's go to Mary. Mary, you're with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hi. So nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Mary.
I have one question in particular. And I'm going to retire July 31st of this year. I'll be 66 on July 7th. And when I retire, I have a decision to make about whether I take a single life pension through my employer or I do the 100% joint and survivor pension.
Uh-huh.
Now, the single life pension is going to be $3,200 roughly, and the joint is $2,790. Now,
and what's the remainder on the benefit to your spouse on the $2,790? Is it 50%?
I actually have options on that.
Okay.
I can go 50% or 66 2/3. But the reason I'm asking is my husband's Social Security is only $990 a month. So if I were to pass before him, I would be leaving him with nothing if I did the 100%. But his health isn't great. Mine is great. And barring some accident, whatever, I was wondering, would it be to my advantage to take the full benefit?
Is there a pop-up provision on this? In other words, should he predecease you, will this pension pop back up to a higher amount?
It doesn't say that.
Some have it. It's not the norm.
Tell us the company, if you're comfortable, that you're retiring from.
It's Dignity Health.
Okay. Oh, Dignity.
I'm not sure.
It's actually, and they don't offer a lump sum.
They do, but I was kind of thinking that the smarter route to go would be to take the monthly pension.
What do you have as far as 401k assets, IRAs,
between you and your husband, between the both of you?
Since I've carried most of it, I have currently my balance for my 403b is $390,000, and then there's the 401a from them for $22,400.
And how old's your husband?
He's 68, and I am I'll be 66 in July.
And do you owe anyone money?
Nope. Well, the house.
And how much do you owe on the home?
About $145,000. We live here in Folsom. The the mortgage. So I'm paying like $1,100 a month right now.
Got it. And any other assets?
There is I do have an annuity that's like $145,000. When I transferred my money from, I used to work at El Camino Hospital in the Bay Area. And when I transferred money over, my husband was concerned about losing money. So when I talked to the Fidelity people, they just put it, I didn't even realize, I actually go to see, I've talked to Matt Crystal, one of your advisors, but I didn't even realize it was put in an annuity.
So it was, money from your employer's savings plan?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you have 560.
You know what? I want almost
$557,000 in retirement plans.
And this is a tough question, but you said your husband's not in great health.
No, he's had a stroke. He's had open heart surgery. He's doing okay, but it's one of those.
So one thing you could here's a couple of things to think about. You could. So there's different levels of survivor benefit, number one, right? So you can joint and 100%, which would cost you the most amount of money. Or you might even be able to do joint with a 25% payout, which costs you the least amount, right? So there's a gradient there. I'm almost thinking, what if you did something where it would provide him a small amount, and then you bought a term life insurance policy for a shorter period of time?
A 10-year level term.
Yeah.
Or maybe even... Or maybe two policies, maybe some for 10 and some for, and one policy for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So the worst would be you retire, you know, something happens to you the next day, and now your husband's like, great, now like money's gone, he stopped, right? Because your chance of passing away in the next 5 years, statistically, assuming you can pass a medical, which you can do now before you retire.
Yeah
that you would know. I can't believe I'm saying this, Scott. The same thing was going through my,
and normally
you knew I was thinking the same thing too. Because people try to sell universal life or whole life policies, this because they're big fat commissions and they retain value inside of them. And they'll tell you how great they are.
And they say it's a pension maximization, but you're
different.
Yeah. And you don't need this life insurance till your dying day.
And what you're trying to do is you're going through this decision, which is I want to mitigate risk for my husband, but statistically I know that he does not have a normal life expectancy.
But if you take this survivor option, you're paying
forever unless it has a pop-up provision on it.
It doesn't say it in the writing.
Okay, it would actually say it. So I'm going to go with Scott on this one. And I would look at purchasing... heck, I'd bounce back to Matt Crystal and ask him how much you should buy.
Yeah, based on need.
On need. And my guess is it will be less than $500,000 worth. And I like the idea of buying a 5-year term and a 10-year level term and taking 100% payout on the annuity. Yep.
And it's called a 10-year level?
Yeah, 10-year, a 5-year level term or 10-year level term.
We're just making the numbers up now, because if you go through the analysis with your Hanson McLean advisor, Matt, he'll be able to come and tell you more exactly.
And that way, he's protected. Your husband's protected for a period of time.
Which is exactly what I want. Okay, so here's the other thing. They did sell me when I went to the hospital one day, and I did get sold a universal health life. I think it's only $25,000. Can I just cancel that?
How long have you owned it?
A little over a year.
Holy smokes. And what company sold it to you?
Fidelity. I think it was Fidelity. I don't think I have that paper in front of me.
How much money are you putting into
Matt,
it?
I think you're probably going to want to cancel it.
Yeah.
Have Matt Crystal look at that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your Hanson McLean advisor.
He's noticed it, but since it was a little far out from my retirement, the last time I saw him, we were going to connect with that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have him look at
it. You'll probably want to stop it.
Yeah, and you're probably going to stop that and then look at a 5-year, 10-year.
But you want to get insured. You want to
buy the insurance before you make the election on your pension.
Yeah.
Because that election's irrevocable.
Yeah.
And
just in case they find something or whatever, or you can't get the life insurance,
it's going to change your decision making on the pension. So you want to get together with your advisor as quickly as possible to go over that.
Okay.
Yeah, and he can direct you. There's some good cheap online insurance that he can help steer you towards. So,
your thought process is
I like it.
Yeah,
this is a big decision.
They are, and it's not like I'm wishing for worst case.
No.
Scenario,
this is probably the largest financial decision you'll ever make, right here on this pension.
Yeah, and you're being very realistic about the outcomes. Yeah. You know, from a statistical probability standpoint.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I have to say, I love both of you. My husband and I have been both to your Social Security seminar and your Seven Decision Point seminar. And I listen to your radio show on the podcast all the time.
Oh,
well, thank you.
You know, it's interesting. So we often talk about the when people need to get educated to a point just so they can make wise decisions, right?
Yes.
And so the questions you're posing and the way you're thinking about this shows they had some education, and we commend you for doing that. I think
and we talk about, if you've been to the Social Security workshop, we talk about longevity, right?
Yes.
That's one of the things, which is you have to take a realistic view of your longevity.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I have to say, Matt also did that. You know, it's like one of those conversations people don't have until sometimes it's too late, but he brought it up almost initially. It's like, we need to talk about life expectancy and reality. So,
all right, Mary, we wish you well. Congrats on your upcoming
retirement. Wait, Scott, she was complimenting us. We could go on and on and on. This is the sort of fulfillment I've been looking for my whole life.
No, I get that from my wife and children at home all the time.
You were so lucky, Dad.
Thank you so much for the hard work you did and for providing for this meal, this particular meal. Thank you, Dad.
You know, Dad, this steak is underdone. This isn't cooked fully. I don't like my scrambled eggs runny.
Oh, my God.
All right, Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, glad you called.
Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.
I wish I was joking about both of those.
Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for 2018. And
thank you for listening to us throughout the year. And thank you for our number of people that are subscribing to our podcast.
Continues to
record
highs. Yeah, I think it's a lot more listen to that than listen to on terrestrial radio. But we appreciate it. Anyway, have a wonderful new year. We have a safe new year and enjoy
friends and family.
Year. Yeah. This has been Hans McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.